Oh, God.
The guy's like a proper idiot, basically, and getting his mum to stick up for him when people are getting...
His mum?
Yeah.
Everyone, and welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast. This is episode 14. I'm your host, Andy, and joining me this time from the Retro Resistance, aka Things Like That podcast, is...
Hi, I'm Mount 1976, and this is the first time I've been on a Retro Asylum podcast.
How you doing, matey? You all right?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks a lot for having me on the show, mate.
No, mate, honestly, I've got to thank you because my other co-hosts are too busy doing other things, so I'm glad you sort of jumped on board and came to save the show. I really appreciate it, buddy.
That's all right. No problem, mate. No problem at all.
Right, so before we carry on finding out what we've been up to, let me quickly tell everyone what the show lineup's going to be. First of all, we're going to tell you a little bit about what we've been up to, what we've been playing. We've got some site news and announcements. Then we've got the Retro Gaming Music Challenge. Then we've got the topic of the month, which is retro remakes. And after that, we've got a few shout-outs. So, yeah, let's get on with the show, matey. What have you been up to then, Melk?
Well, last Sunday, we had the arcade hunt in Southend, where you and Swainy and Tony went, and we went to Southend looking for arcade machines.
Yeah, so that was part of the great arcade hunt Southend. So how did you find Southend then, matey?
I go there quite regularly, and it seems like it's pretty much dying off, especially for arcades. It's more gambling machines and, you know, things like that.
Ah, so you said that word there. Now, before we carry on about Southend, I've completely forgot to mention what we're going to do. I'm not going to edit out all the things like that that have been said, because it's contagious. Tony basically says it non-stop. After every three words, he'll say things like that. So from now on, every time you say that, I will basically leave it in and you'll hear like a little Super Mario coin collection thing. So we'll see how many times you can do it then.
See, I was thinking of doing something similar like that and suggested it to Tony, because there's like an episode of South Park where it comes up a beep where every time they use a certain... Yeah, so it could be like... you know, a challenge in itself to try not to say it.
Well, I mean, for ages ago, I actually suggested to you and Tony that you guys had to pick certain buzzwords that you had to use. And what I was saying, that Tony says things like that, he has to take a shot of whiskey. But then I thought that would be a bit dangerous because he would end up in a coma or something.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I did say to him, yeah, we'll have to do that, but we haven't got around to doing it.
All right then, matey. So let's go quickly back to Southend then. So you've been to Southend quite a few times. Tell us what it was like back in the heyday when you used to go.
Well, first time I ever went there, I think it was about 1993. I went there because my friend's family used to live in Rayleigh, and we went there to stay at his grandparents' house. And me and my friend Dean went to Southend, and it used to be rammed with arcades. You know, there was arcade machines in every single arcade. You know, hardly any gamblers, to be fair.
So it's a complete total contrast what we have today then, because when we ended up going down there, Melk, it just seemed like a bit of a ghost town when it came to arcades.
Yeah, most of the arcades are just full of those stupid dancing games, which I know Tony liked.
He absolutely loves that, and I have got a nice little video of him doing it. So I will post something on the forum, basically, with the great arcade hunt. But there's the other thing I wanted to talk about this, Melk. Now, we did do the Retro Asylum versus Retro Resistance match to see who would win. Do you want to tell us about the results then, mate?
Well, we didn't win a single one. Started off good on Pac-Man. I think I've done better on that probably than later games we played. And was it Pac-Man? No, I tell a lie. We played Outrun first, didn't we?
We played a number of different games then. So I'll tell you what. Why don't we tell everyone sort of the games that we actually played there? What were the games? We played Pac-Man, you mentioned. What was that called?
I'm not 100% sure. It was some sort of new Pac-Man challenge game where it was a four-player simultaneous Pac-Man game, sort of like how the new one on the 360 is. I think is it Champion Edition? It's like Pac-Man, but it's all been, you know, done high def, and how they've done the graphics, they look incredible. They're sort of like light up, don't they? It's a really good take on it, to be fair. And you have four Pac-Man on the screen, which obviously the four players control, and you have to get a power pill and try and eat the other players before they get them or eat the ghosts. But the ghosts can actually kill the other players as well. And obviously, like, if you haven't got a purple at all, you can get killed by the person that has got one. Mm-hmm. And it's a really simple idea, but it worked really well. I didn't even know it was out.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's not really like a retro game, but it's Pac-Man, so it's retro in spirit. And I tell you what, out of pretty much all the games we played there, that was probably the most multiplayer fun that we got that day, actually.
Yeah, and the Simpsons were really good as well, to be fair, because we found a Simpsons cabinet, didn't we?
And the best thing about the Simpsons arcade, Mark, well, it was only 20 pence.
Yeah, that was really good.
Now, one of the things I noticed about that arcade, Melk, was that it's not as big as I remember it. Like, years and years ago, when I was younger, I used to imagine the machine was huge, and maybe it's because we're older, bigger, and a bit fatter. We couldn't all get around the machine, because I felt really claustrophobic playing that thing.
Yeah, and it really hurt my wrist, because the buttons, because I was playing Homer, I think, and now the buttons were right at the bottom. You sort of had to hold your hand at a stupid angle to play it. And I can't remember that years ago when I used to play them.
Now, one of the things that I remember when we were playing that was, well, there's two things, but the first thing I'll mention is that you mentioned during the bonus level that there was a sure way to win the blowing up the balloon section.
Yeah, and it didn't work, did it?
So tell us, what was that little technique that you were explaining?
The sure way to win it, it's sort of what I do on my arcade cabinet, and if I play it on Xbox Live to cheat, if you get your finger and quickly rub it between the buttons, it does it mega quick. I mean, if you play Simpsons Online on that, or, you know, a game that's on the actual arcade, my main cabinet, it does work. But in that arcade, it didn't work at all, did it?
It didn't work at all, because I won that one. I blew up the balloon first of all.
Yeah, that's right. And I've pretty much made myself sound stupid. And same with track and field, I was expecting to do it on that, but the arcade version of that had things between the buttons to stop you doing that,
right,
which I never knew. Because, as I say, when I play it on my main cabinet, that's how I cheat on track and, combat school or any games like that.
Yeah, because that was one of the other games we found. We found track and field, and I had played it back in the olden days in the arcade, and it was just nice actually discovering an old machine like that. I didn't think we'd find any older games. I thought maybe we would at least find a Street Fighter 2 arcade cabinet, which there was none at all.
No, that was... And that was one I was expecting to actually win on, actually, which is a shame, but... Somewhere had one last year when I went, but I couldn't remember where it was. It was just in some sort of cafe or something.
Yeah, I mean, we searched through loads of different arcades. What were some of the other games that we played and you guys lost at?
Outrun, where you play the four players on it, but it's two people per Ferrari. And I think that worked really well as well. Because, say, like, we had it, I was driving, and then I crash, it swaps to Tony driving. And then after a certain amount of time, it'll swap back anyway if he doesn't crash. And it worked really well. That was one that was really close, actually, because you and Swiley took over us at the last minute.
Now, I remember, basically. I mean, it's a great little machine. So you two were sat in one car. Me and Swaney were sat in the other car. I'll tell you what, I was a little bit nervous because I didn't know whether it was a rolling start or whether you had to accelerate. And I sort of started off, I think, a little bit behind. And then we were playing catch-up. And then you guys kept knocking us, like, sideways and so on. And then I realized, you know what? Maybe if I gave you that little sort of bit of where you're ahead of us and you thought you were going to win, and then if we just suddenly sped up right past you, that was the tactic, and it worked. It worked fantastic.
Yeah, it did work really well. And it was really fun as well, that game was, to be fair. And that's a sort of retro remake in itself.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about Outrun in the topic of the month section. Now, the other game that we played as well was Daytona.
Yeah, Daytona, which I was expecting to win on that as well. But to be fair, that wasn't my fault because I always play manual gears and the gear shifter wouldn't shift into fourth. So I was going around really slow because I couldn't shift out of third gear.
Always with the excuses, Matt. Last time we went to the Trocadero, what was it? Oh, you couldn't fit into the car, and this time it was you couldn't change the gears.
Yeah, as I say, that totally wasn't my fault. But saying that, though, the other arcade cabinet I played it on after wouldn't shift into the gear either.
No, I think you're just making excuses, Malk. But I'll tell you what, that again, I think we played it twice and it was really, really competitive. And I think the first time round, Swaney won because at the beginning of that race, I was doing so well. I was really ahead of. And I think Swaney smashed up on me and then someone else smashed me up. And I came last, basically. But at least Swaney got the win for Retro Asylum. And I think on the second one, I smashed you up against the wall.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it was really neck and neck, and I could really feel the pressure, and it was just like something out of those movies. And I looked to my side, and there you were, and I thought, you know what, I'll smash him against the wall, and that way I'll sure win this one, which I did, which I'm proud of, actually.
Yeah, it was really good fun.
So, okay, then, apart from Southend, like I said, guys, we will post something on the Retro Asylum forum about this. We've got videos, we've got photographs. I've got to say, overall, Southend, it's a bit of a ghost town when it comes to arcade. Hopefully somewhere there is a seaside town that has got some great arcade games. And if anyone does know, please let us know and maybe we can go and check it out. So what else have you been playing?
Well, I've been playing a lot of games on my 360, but they're more modern, so I can't really talk about them. I suppose the one that isn't modern, is, believe it or not, is Daytona.
You've been playing Daytona?
Yeah.
So what is it about Daytona, mate, that draws you back into it? Because you're really addicted to that. You love your driving games.
Yeah, because I've got really into them lately. I don't know whether you've watched a video.
I've got
a few steering wheels. I've done a video on the three I got, and there was one in Southend that I was going to buy, and I didn't buy it in the end because I thought, you know, what if it don't work? It'll be hard to take it back. And then yesterday when I was uptown, I seen the exact same one in Cash Converters, so I did actually buy it yesterday. So that's
why. Oh, you bought it?
Yeah.
How much did you buy it for?
60 quid, yeah. Whereas it was 55 at Southend, but if you look on eBay, they go for like 150. So
you know what you should do? You should have bought that other one in Southend and just sold it.
Yeah,
made a little bit of cash that way. But yeah, so tell us, what is it about Daytona that you like? Do you like the overall presentation, the music, the graphics? What is it that's so appealing?
Well, it's just so much good fun, really. Because if you play it online, you race with, like, I think it's up to 4 actual real people. And the thing that's good about Daytona as well is it's got loads of other cars on the actual track. Mm. I think there's about 40 in total. I may be wrong. I just really got into it. I don't know why. I definitely think it's one of the best racing games ever.
Is it because you've got the steering wheel and it actually makes you feel like you're playing the arcade more? Or?
Well, yeah, there's that as well. I mean, I never play them on a joypad, to be fair. I'm rubbish on a joypad.
I mean, what I find when I play Daytona, the only sort of level I tend to play is the first one where you go around in circles. I don't seem to sort of like play any of the other tracks because I used to work in the Trocadero years and years ago when it used to be Sega World, and they used to have 8 machines lined up, which they still have there, but it's called Funland now. And yeah, I used to play that sometimes on my lunch break, but we all used to play it on the first level. So what else have you been playing then, Malk? Any other retro stuff, or is that you all retroed out?
No, I've been trying to do, because you know that challenge you're doing, beat a game a week?
Yeah.
Well, I said something stupid to Tony when we were recording one of the podcasts before. I'd really like to do a playthrough of Ghost and Goblins on a Commodore 64. And Tony was like, oh, can you complete that then? And I was like, no. So I've been practicing that. I can get like quite far on it now. And as soon as I can play it that well, I can do the entire game. I'll be uploading that. So I've been playing a lot of Commodore games on the emulator, to be fair.
Which one was it? Ghouls and Ghosts or Ghost and Goblins?
Ghost and Goblins.
Well, I tell you what, it is ultra tough. I mean, Ghosts and Goblins is tough as it is, but I found it incredibly tough on the C64.
Yeah, because you've got no continues or anything.
So how far can you get then without dying then?
To the fourth sort of stage.
Really?
You know, the one after the tower, the one after that. The one where there's that dragon thing at the end of it. I'm not sure how many levels there is actually on the conversion.
I think it's probably about 6, actually. I think it might be missing a level. But the C64 conversion is absolutely superb, Melk, compared to the little crappy Spectrum version that we got that just didn't look right. It was just too much colour on screen, too much colour clash, not being able to see the characters, and they just didn't have the overall presentation of the C64. All right, well, let me quickly tell you what I've been playing, matey. I've actually been playing a bit of Pang. Now, Pang's one of my favourite games ever. I used to love playing it on the arcade, and I've been playing it on the ZX Spectrum on my PSP on the way to work back and forth. And I'll tell you what, it's amazing, Malk, how accurate this conversion is.
Yeah, Ocean did a really good job with that on every system, I think. I've never actually played the Spectrum one myself, but I've played it on the Commodore, the Amstrad, and obviously the 16-bit systems, and every version I've played has been pretty much spot on to the arcade.
Well, I think the reason why it works well is because the graphics aren't overly too complicated and the whole process of the game is very, very simple. All you have to do is basically is you've got a little character, you see these big bubbles on the screen, and you basically shoot your thing, pop the bubbles then pop into smaller bubbles, you keep them popping them until there's no more bubbles on the screen. So it's so simple, it was bound to work on a Spectrum, and it did. Now, what I found, Malk, on the Spectrum is that the graphics are absolutely amazing. They look like they've taken the arcade sprites, taken away the colour, and the gameplay's all there. It's simply superb, mate. Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it's definitely a classic game. I mean, it's one I used to play a hell of a lot on the arcade.
There's one thing that I noticed, though. Recently, I played it on the Super Nintendo because I wanted to see what all the other versions were like. And I noticed that the Super Nintendo, it's actually only one player, Melk.
I never knew that.
Yeah, basically, like, the Spectrum's got two players, so you can play co-op. And what's the other version I was thinking about? The Amstrad. I don't know if there is an Amstrad version, but I know there was an Amstrad version that came out on the cartridge format, which is very difficult to get hold of, I believe.
Yeah, it's on that Amstrad GX 4000 console.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think... See, the thing with that, it was a really bad console. It was terrible. But people select the Commodore 64 GS console thing. I'm not sure what that's called, actually. But right. At least with that, you could use the cartridges on a Commodore 64. Whereas the Amstrad one, you couldn't use them on an Amstrad, could you? It'd only work on that console.
Yeah.
And I think it's only got about 8 games out for it or something.
Yeah, I should have asked my supervisor, actually, whether he's got that, because my supervisor, basically, I went round to his house a couple of weeks ago, and he's a games collector, and he's got a whole room in his house dedicated to gaming, and he had all these systems that I was just like, wow, I couldn't believe it. I'd love to have something like that if it weren't for my wife telling me to sort of not have these things out and about. I mean, I recently got an Amiga. I got two Amigas, an Amiga 500, an Amiga 1200, plus with about 90 games, which was given to me by Swainy, which is really nice.
This is Matt Denaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into Retro Asylum Podcast.
Let's move on to the next section, which is site news and announcements. Right, so what I want to talk about is Manic Miner is heading to the Xbox 360. And it's not part of the Xbox Live Arcade games. It's part of the indie games, which I find really bizarre. But on the plus side, Melk, that means the game itself is only going to cost about, what, 80 Microsoft points, which is about less than a pound, I believe.
Yeah, that's really good, because sometimes they have some really good games on the indie side of it.
Mm-hmm. So what's your view? Do you think Manic Miner will work well and sell well on the Xbox 360 indie games?
Yeah, I would have thought it would. I'd definitely download it myself, because I'm a big fan of it. That's one of the few games that I do actually think is much better on the Spectrum.
And apparently, according to what I've read in the press release, the game itself is 100% accurate. It'll play like it does on the Spectrum, but you have got the added bonus of making the graphics a little bit more clearer. You've got save slots as well, which makes that a little bit easier, so that way if you do make a mistake, you can continue where you died, because it is a tough game. But the reason why I'm looking forward to this, Malk, is because this is the first game that Elite, and it's the same company, well, in name, that was back in the heyday of the 8-bit games, that they're actually putting out on the Xbox 360. So Elite basically have loads of other games. They've got Chucky Egg, they've got loads of other classics, and Chucky Egg is a game that I think will go down so well on the Xbox 360 because it's so damn playable.
Oh yeah, Chucky Egg's a classic. I think the best version of that, my personal opinion, is the BBC.
That is the ultimate sort of version. I mean, I was going to include that on the 8-bit wars when I did it, but I just thought I'd stick to the normal thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, guys, check out Manic Miner when it comes out on the Xbox 360. I think it comes after the week after this podcast comes out, so that will be mid sort of May, basically. So right, let me quickly tell you some announcements. Now, recently, Mal, what I've decided to do to make the Retro Asylum a little bit more community-based is I've decided that I'll start promoting other people's podcasts, because there's so many other good retro gaming podcasts out there, mate. And some of them really deserve a lot more iTunes love and a lot more attention. Now, one of the podcasts that I want to mention, first of all, is a podcast called Gamer Dads, and they've got a podcast called Retrocast. And you can find that at gamerdads.co.uk. You can download that on iTunes as well. And we've also got a little link on our forum. So they did an interview with Jazz Rignall. I don't know if you listened to that, mate.
Yeah, that was superb. I've listened to that about 3 times.
Yep, and I tell you what, the guys from Gamer Dads, fantastic blokes, and they've even sent me another interview that they've done with Retro Gamer Dads, so I'll be putting that up on Sunday, so it should be interesting, so we can find out what goes on behind a retro gamer with Dads, basically, so it should be interesting. Now, the other podcast that I want to promote as well is a podcast called Arcade and Retro. Now, these are like a bunch of Irish lads, and I tell you what, that podcast is phenomenally fantastic. I stuck the first episode on the site, And basically, on the first episode, they talk about Star Fox or Star Wing, whatever you want to call it. But they really go in depth. And in the podcast itself, the passion for that game really comes across. And I've learned so many interesting things about that. And what I'll be doing, I'll be, again, sticking links to their iTunes, to their site. And guys, you have to listen to these podcasts. I mean, Arcade and Retro have also done another episode on Hudson Soft. They've done one on Probotector, aka Contra, and they've done a special two-parter on Zelda. And I tell you what, you can't miss that. So, amazing podcast. So, have you listened to that one, Malcolm?
No, I haven't got around to listening to that yet, but I will definitely check it out.
Yeah, I think as soon as we finish recording, mate, definitely check out Arcade and Retro. Now, the next podcast that I want to mention that I want to promote is called The Odd Pod, and that's done by one of our community members, BuzzPop. And he's into sort of retro games and retro toys. Now, he's done two episodes, but I've only stuck one episode on the site. And again, guys, you know, please give him some iTunes reviews because I can see great potential for this podcast because I love retro toys. I used to have things like Transformers, Ghostbuster toys, and these are the sort of thing that BuzzPop talks about. So, look, what was your favourite retro toy then back in the day?
Well, like I was saying to Swainy, I've still got them somewhere. I've got the $6 million man, and I've got Evil Knievel.
Oh, yeah, the Evil Knievel. That was the one with the red thing, and you'd put the bike with Evil Knievel on it, and then you'd wind up the little thing around the side.
Yeah, and then it goes shooting off, and you can put it to go over jumps and all sorts of big jumps that you make and that. Yeah, it's pretty good.
But, you know, thinking back about it, it wasn't as good as the commercials used to make it out to be. Because in the commercials, yeah, Malk, you'd wind it up and Evil Knievel would go for miles and jump over things. But in reality, I'd build like a little ramp with a magazine and a couple of books. And sometimes he wouldn't even go up the ramp.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes it'd just fall over. Go about 3 inches and then just fall over.
I think it's just one of these child nostalgic things. But again, guys, if you like your retro gaming toys... And I nearly said Tony's word then.
Yeah.
Definitely check out the Odd Pod podcast and give them a review. Now, the next thing I want to promote is a site called retrovideogamer.co.uk. Now, basically, it's another retro gaming site. It's not in competition to us because, you know, I think anyone that has a retro gaming site, I'm happy for them because... They put a lot of hard work and effort into this, and these guys certainly have done that. It's a lovely looking site, and that's retrovideogamer.co.uk. Now, they've got some really nice written interviews. They've got Steve from Elite, so that's worth checking out, and they've also got Anthony Gutter from Mastertronic, and they've also got an interview with Team 17. So, guys, definitely check out retrovideogamer.co.uk.
Hello everybody, this is Damien and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
The next section is the Retro Gaming Music Challenge. Now, are you ready for this then, Melk?
Yeah, no problem, mate.
Alright, normally this section's called the Andy vs. Glenn Music Challenge. But because this time the podcast itself is about retro remakes, I've decided that this time it's going to be the Retro Remake Gaming Music Challenge. So the way this works is Melk picks a little tune and then we play it. Then I pick a little tune and then we play it. And then basically, once the podcast is up on the site itself, let us know which track you preferred. Did you prefer Melk's or did you prefer mine? So, Mark, why don't you tell us, what have you picked for us?
Mine is a main theme from Bionic Commando Rearmed, which is a remake of the NES game Bionic Commando.
So what is it about this tune you like before we play it? What is it? Why do you like this tune?
Well, I just thought it was a really catchy tune, and sometimes when they do make remakes of music, it doesn't sound right, but I just thought this did really sound impressive. Well, the whole game's got a really good soundtrack, to be fair.
All right, so yeah, I've had a little listen to this, so guys, sit back and enjoy this. And again, remember, let us know which tune you think is better. Enjoy. We'll be right back. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Now it's time for my choice of retro gaming music. Now, my remake is going to be a remake of the RoboCop music from the Commodore 64. Now, I don't know who did this version. It's a great version, and it's got electric guitars. So it's got the classic Ariston sort of music, and it sounds absolutely fantastic. And the reason why I like this tune was because I remember sort of just playing this on my Spectrum and on the C64, and also listening to the Ariston advert, so it's ingrained in my memory basically. So what's your memory on this tune?
Yeah, it's a really good choice. I remember it from the advert, and what you say, from the Commodore 64 version of RoboCop. I think we had it on the last 1HM podcast we'd ever do.
I think we might have done, but yeah, tell you what guys, sit back and enjoy this. And again, like I said before, let us know which tune is the best. Section, it is the topic of the month. Now the topic of the month is retro remakes. So before we go on talking about retro remakes, let's find out what makes a good retro remake.
Well, I personally think if it's a good retro remake, it's got to actually pay homage to the original game it's based off, because there's been quite a lot of bad ones as well, but we won't get into that. And I also like it if it includes the original game that it's got a remake of, as well as like a bonus.
Yeah, some of the games we're going to mention in a little bit have actually got those added bonuses, which I think is a fantastic thing for nostalgia goodness, basically. So do you think it works for all games? Are all games timeless?
To a degree, as long as it's, as I say, if it's done right, then yeah. I mean, I've even got a remake of Space Invaders, believe it or not.
Have you? Oh,
yeah.
I've even played that. What is that, on the PC, Xbox?
It's on the PlayStation 2.
Ah, okay. I think I know the one you mean, actually. I think I remember that one. It's one of the games that I thought about getting, but I didn't actually get. What's this game like?
It's called Space Invaders Invasion Day by Taito. I'm not 100% sure of the year. It'll be, I think, about 2005-ish.
Right.
Because I can't actually find it on a case, believe it or not. It's on the PS2. It might have been on the normal Xbox as well. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah. it's plays the same as old-fashioned Space Invaders, but it's sort of got a graphical type of look similar to Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
And you control the character at the bottom of the screen, basically shooting up at the aliens. But they've got like a lot more variety of aliens that can actually attack you than what obviously there is in Space Invaders.
I think I've actually played this. That does sound too familiar. So basically, you're actually, what, are you like a human? You've got to shoot things. So it's like kind of
Cabal type.
I was going to say, like, there was a game in the arcade called Dynamite Duke, but Cabal was pretty much exactly the same thing, basically.
Yeah, and it works really well. You can choose one of three characters. I'm not 100% sure what the storyline is. I don't think it's really got one as such. Mm-hmm. But it's basically, like, you've got to stop the invasion of the aliens, you know, like, and it's Space Invaders. I mean, that's the oldest game I could actually think of. I mean, I know that it is older.
Well, I mean, it's a classic, and for a game like that, you don't really need... It's all about the playability, so you don't really need a story. So it's all about racking up some points, how far you can go. So, all right. The other question I was going to ask you, Malk, is on what platform do you think remakes are good? Do you think... What system do you think remakes should work at?
Well, I suppose, really, they can work on any of the, you know, the more modern platforms. Obviously, your Xbox 360s, PS3s, or your PC. But saying that, though, the Wii's got quite a lot of decent Konami ones.
There seems to be like a nice sort of like a retro revolution, all these games coming back again. The system that I think that's really like showcased a lot of these retro games, and it's even brought back some retro gaming programmers, is the iPhone. Because there's so many games that are just so easy to make, and that's what I like about the iPhone. It's just like back like it was in the heyday with the bedroom programmers. Now, in a few weeks, I'm interviewing Colin Jones, who created such games as Rockstar at My Hamster and Slightly Magic, and he's recently come out with a game on the iPhone, so I think the iPhone is perfect. The only thing I've got against the iPhone is the controls.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with any of those sort of touchscreen devices. It's not actually the same as physically touching a joypad or a joystick and the buttons.
No, you don't get the whole sort of control. I mean, for games like Manic Miner, because I've got that on the iPhone, it's impossible. I mean, the game's impossibly tough as it is on the ZX Spectrum. You put it with a touchscreen control, you can't get anywhere.
No, saying that, like Prince of Persia as well, I believe that's on it. And I would imagine that makes it pretty unplayable because you've got to be really precise with that game.
Yeah, and I think that's what you find with the older sort of like retro games. It is all about the controls, and unfortunately the iPhone actually lacks that. But again, it's a good system to make sort of like cheap games. Because unlike sort of like bigger companies now, you've got all the Call of Duties, you've got, which I know you're not a big fan of, but
if you want
smaller games, these smaller games are easily made on the iPhone or on the Xbox Indie or on the PC, basically. And they can be made on the cheap. So, right, let's get down to business then. Now, there's one game, Malk, that I want to talk about, and that is Duke Nukem Forever.
That's a classic. I do think they did a really good job redoing that, to be fair.
You know what? I completely, totally agree. Now, I've read in magazines, I've heard on other podcasts that Duke Nukem is absolutely rubbish. It's dated, it's sexist, it's horrible, it hasn't evolved. But you know what? It's Duke Nukem, for God's sake. It's exactly the same game, but with a modern touch-up. I mean, what more do people expect?
Exactly.
I really can't think
exactly.
of it.
Exactly. See, I know I'm going to sound like Tony now, but this is true what I've read on quite a few reviews on it. Oh, it's not Modern Warfare and all this, like, you know what I mean? But it's not trying to be that.
No, I mean, that's it. It's basically being Duke Nukem, and Duke Nukem was more of an exploring. You go around, look for a switch, you do different things, you get a jetpack. So it had a lot more variety, and I couldn't believe it. A lot of modern reviewers are saying, oh, it's sexist, that sort of humour has aged badly. But I'm thinking, you know what, it still works. Maybe it's because I'm a retro fan now, but I think Duke Nukem, the game itself, plays well. So, okay, let's talk about the graphics. What do you think about the graphics then, Malk, in this particular game?
I think they're very good. They're not the greatest graphics I've ever seen, but they certainly are functional. They do look like you'd imagine Duke Nukem would look.
And again, what about the playability?
Plays exactly like your old-fashioned Duke Nukem.
Right, so sometimes in the Duke Nukem, you've got different sort of levels. I remember playing the game, and you've got like a bit where you shrink, and you go in a little car, and you're racing around the sort of buildings.
Oh, that was fun, yeah, and you have to make jumps. I think that's one in the casino. I'm not 100% sure.
I think it is somewhere at the, sort of somewhere in the beginning you've got that sort of level. And the other bit I like as well is just that the multiplayer, it's just full of fun, that game. I honestly can't understand why people didn't like this game now.
No, as I say, I think it's because like, people have got used to them sort of games like Modern Warfare, and because Duke Nukem obviously came out way before that, before any of the Call of Duties, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it was like, what was the first system it came out on? Was it the...
PC, I think.
Yeah, it was the PC. I think I first played it on my N64, where it was completely heavily edited.
Yeah, it's got rid of all the swearing and the nudity, but bizarrely, it's got like headless corpses and that, and a lot more violence than what Duke Nukem originally had.
But I think Duke Nukem plays well, and I think it's aged fantastically. And I think for a game that was about 13, 14 years in the making, I think it's all right.
Yeah, I think they've definitely done a good job with it. I mean, I wasn't disappointed at all.
Now, did you get this game when it first came out, or did you wait for it to go down, Bryce?
Well, you see, the day before we had the first 1HM meetup, I actually bought the PC version of it. So I didn't play it much that day, but since I've played it a lot, and the only thing is, if I play it online, I'm playing against other people on the PC that are using a mouse and a keyboard.
Yeah.
And they're much better than me at first-person shooters, you know, against Tony, and I played it against Will and Blim, and I've never won a game on it.
Maybe it's because you're crap at it, man.
I am crap at first-person shooters. Well, you beat me on the old Duke Nukem, didn't you, on the 360?
Oh, yeah. It's fun. That's another great sort of little remake as well. Well, it's not a remake. It's sort of... Has that been HD'd up, or is that just basically the same game again, being re-released?
It kind of is been sort of adapted to the 360. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's HD'd up as such. I think the first ever Duke Nukem game wasn't actually a 3D game. It was sort of a side-scrolling sort of thing. But I've never actually played it. It was the first time I ever played it. I had it on a Sega Saturn.
I've actually got that on my iPhone, that scrolling sort of Duke Nukem game. I've actually got that. I think it's... I can't remember what system it's on, but I've tried playing it. It's not that great, and I think Duke Nukem...
No.
It took the whole Doom, it took the whole Wolfenstein formula and just gave it a nice sort of bit of something else just to make it different, you know? I like the crude sense of humour. I like the nudity. I like the way he gives money to the strippers, the way he... kicks the crap out of things.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people probably, when they complain about the how it is, it's not supposed to be a game for children, you know, it's an adult sort of game.
I think the conclusion is basically, it's just like, I find that most retro gamers have got maybe a soft spot for Duke Nukem, but the majority of the younger gamers, and it's even people that have got the 360, they're probably a good few years younger than us, so they don't really remember him fondly, and maybe it is a bit of nostalgia for us, but I quite like Duke Nukem. So let's move on to the next game, which is Splatterhouse, the remake on the 360.
Now, I think that's a brilliant game, personally, myself, and yet it got absolutely slated in the reviews.
So is this game a remake, a retelling, a sequel? What is this?
It's sort of like a reimagined, you know, like a remake, as such of the original game. It's basically you played a part of Rick Taylor, who's a college student, and he's going to, with his girlfriend, to this house, which is called West Mansion, to interview Dr. West. I can't remember what his first name is. And he gets attacked and his girlfriend gets kidnapped. And the mask actually gives him powers to basically get his girlfriend back.
Now, this is another game now that got completely slated. And again, it was being compared to, say, games like Bayonetta, Gods of War, and all these other games like Devil May Cry. But it's not one of those games. It's just like an updated version of what the old game was, and I think the old game is pretty good, and this pretty much stays true to it.
Yeah, and what I really like about it is, while it is like your sort of 3D, like your Bayonetta and that, which I, to be fair, I've never played, but I have actually seen it, it does stay true to the original, because there's levels where it's like 2D, but 3D sort of side-scrolling, like what the original arcade game is.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me about this game, and what I really like, is the amount of gore. Now, I remember when I first played the Mega Drive version, I was drawn by the blood and guts, because that's one of the reasons why I had to get that game. And this game is certainly gory. I mean, there's always loads of blood on screen. You can tear creatures' arms off. You can use their arms as weapons. Your arm can be torn off and everything.
Yeah, because it's got a good sort of system how you get damaged, and you can actually physically see the damage, can't you?
It's also got a little bit of nudity as well, hasn't it? They've got bits where you can actually look for photographs and you have to put together of, what's her name, Jennifer?
Yeah, Jennifer, yeah. That's Rick's girlfriend, yeah. And you find photographs, topless photographs and things.
Like that? You said it. You nearly said it. So I just thought I'd finish your sentence off there. It's contagious, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
All right then, so what we'll do, let's talk about the other sort of remake, which is OutRun.
Yeah, there's a couple of versions of basically the same game. It's sort of an update of the original OutRun arcade game. Now, it's known as OutRun 2006. It was on the PS2, Xbox and PC. But that is sort of an update of itself on OutRun 2, the arcade game.
So how do you feel this game compares to the original arcade game? To the 2D one, the 1980s version?
It compares really well. It's got the separate routes. You know, you can go either way when you get to the junction at the end of the levels. Basically, you're racing against time to get to checkpoints on time. And it does play really well. And it's got great soundtrack like the original has. The PC version has actually got the arcade soundtrack as well.
Oh, has it? Yeah, the Xbox 360 didn't have it.
No.
The other thing that I'm disappointed with, on the 360, I thought if you finished the game, you'd get like an unlockable... Oh, because that's one of the things we forgot to mention about Splatterhouse. On Splatterhouse, you can unlock, was it three games?
It's got the three original games. And I think, myself, that's a good way, a safe thing to do with a remake. This is something I nearly said to Swaley when I met him on Sunday. You know, like how bad some of the remakes look, like your Double Dragon ones.
Oh, yeah.
Would he actually buy them if it did have the original games on it? Because I would, just for the originals. You know, say the game is crap, but it's got to play them online and it's got the original games. And yeah, I'd probably buy them just for that.
I don't know if this one will do, actually, because I've got some slight news that I'm going to put up about the new Double Dragon, which I'll put up probably Saturday. But I don't think it doesn't come included. But I think if you do have the original game included, it makes that game so much better. And as much as I like OutRun on the Xbox 360, even though it looks a lot nicer, I love the look of the 1980s version. I think it just looks amazing. There's just something about those sort of arcade-style graphics that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and it has aged really well as well. I was playing that yesterday on main, and yeah, it still runs at a decent pace, and it's a challenging game. I can't complete the arcade version. Never been that good at it, to be honest.
All right, so let's quickly talk about another remake that we played as well. And me and you used to play this quite a bit, and it's Contra Hardcore. What's your view on this game?
Well, originally, I thought it was very good, and we used to play it a hell of a lot, didn't we?
We used to play it non-stop. I mean, that game is ultra tough. It really is tough. I mean, there's a certain mode, Malk, where you get hit once, you're dead. But it's got that replayability factor when we used to play it, because there was a time where we would die and then we'd go back and then we'd remember where everything was and then we'd get weapon upgrades. And it's the sort of game, the more you play it, the more you progress, the more weapon upgrades you get. So you can get health bars and energy things that can make you sort of like progress a little bit further. But I just found the game too incredibly tough.
Yeah, it is. It's a really brutal game. It's, as I say, we've never completed it. I think last time I ever played it was when I played it with you, as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, I just haven't gone back to it.
So how do you feel this compares to the original Greiser or Contra? Because recently you've done 8-Bit Wars on that. How does this compare to the original game?
It's a completely different game, isn't it, really? It's more of like a cartoon sort of look to it. It hasn't got any of the original characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lance or Bill's not in it at all.
Yeah.
It's more of a remake sort of to the Mega Drive version of Contra Hardcore.
I think that's what it is. I think it's like a follow-up
and
to that.
That's
game,
the one to be fair, I found brutally hard. I couldn't even do the first level on it.
I don't think I finished that game. I've actually got really far in that game. I must have got to the bit where like this giant robot's chasing after you and in sort of like a Mode 7 type mode, believe it or not, that game's actually got.
Oh, right. I haven't seen that bit.
I'll tell you what. Contra Hardcore on the Mega Drive, superb game. It's got some Mode 7 graphics, which again, it's just see very often on Sega Mega Drive.
No, a few games use that. I think that Castlevania one does that as well.
Yeah, the one that I've recently done on my Beat a Game a Week challenge. But I do think Hardcore, it's a great game. It's a great remake, but they could have made it that little bit easier because I lost patience with it. But then again, these Contra games weren't exactly easy ever.
No, that's right. I mean, the only way you can get good at them, really, is to remember where everything is, like what we were doing on that, because it's an arcade game, it's set to be as hard as possible to take your money off you, I suppose.
Yeah. All right, so the other remake I want to talk about as well, which is on the Xbox 360, is the R-Type HD.
Yeah, that's one of the first games I downloaded when I got the 360, and I had no idea it was even out on it.
That's one of my favourite games, and I think me and you have played that a number of times, actually, and we've completed that a number of times. Now, I think the game looks visually fantastic, but what I love about this particular game, Malk, is it switches back from the normal mode to the more updated mode by the press of a single button, and I think that's a fantastic trick, and I think that's what most modern remakes should have. They should have that option to change the visual between classic and modern.
Yeah, definitely, because that's a really good thing you can do on it. And you can also have it the arcade sort of machine view, where you can see it looking down on the arcade, you know, like you would actually in the arcade. And when you move the joystick, it moves the joystick on the screen, which is really cool.
The other thing I like about this, and I think it is an improvement, now R-Type, I could never get very, very far into it because it was very cruel when it came to checkpoints. But this actually gives you certain checkpoints, so that way you don't have to start right at the beginning of the level, like the classic R-Type game. And because of this, I've actually finished the game, and I've actually enjoyed it a lot more than the original for that reason.
I think
the original R-Type was just too brutal, actually, when it came to that.
Yeah, that's right. And you can have it simultaneous two-player, which you can't on the original arcade one.
All right. So have you got any more remakes you want to talk about in particular?
Well, no. Not on good remakes, really. I still haven't played the new Dizzy game. I know it's been out a while. I don't think so for decent remakes. I've got some bad remakes I'd like to talk about, but...
Go on then, mate. Why don't you tell us you've got some bad ones in?
Well, I think the worst one I've ever seen has got to be that, which I've never actually seen the game, played the game, because it still hasn't materialised yet. But the Double Dragon 2, Wanderer of the Dragons, that looks horrendous.
What happened with that? Do you have any idea?
Well, apparently it's still coming out. It's been rated by the rating board, you know, who classify the games.
As what? That's crap.
I'm not sure what rating it's got. I have actually got a video of it that I've seen on some website. It shows the whole first level and then the start of the second level.
So explain what makes this game so bad then. And I mean as in bad as in crap, not as in bad as in fantastically cool bad. Why is this terrible?
Basically, the graphics look horrendous on it. They look worse than the PS2 sort of, a very bad PS2 game at that.
Mm-hmm.
It slows down every time you, say like you do a combo and then the last hit, to make it look dramatic, it will slow it down. It's doing that with every single person you fight, so it's not making it look cool, it's making it look rubbish basically.
Is this game then taking the old style graphics and giving them like a lick of paint in really crap polygons? Is it the same level design, do you know?
I don't think it is the same level designs, because from what I've seen on this video I've got, you start off as Marion, and then you fight through loads of guys, and then that Willy comes on, is his name Willy? The gun, the guy with the machine gun, and then kills her, and then you get a cutscene which is quite graphic of her dying, and her like breathing, you know, sounding really ill while she's breathing and that, and then Billy comes on, and then smashes his fence, which he totally doesn't do in Double Dragon 2, and then it does sort of, It starts with him, and it's in the bit with the helicopters in the background, you know, like in the original arcade game.
Yeah.
But what can I say that's wrong with it? It looks badly animated, the hit detection doesn't look very good, it looks like it's got a limited amount of moves. Basically, they've took Double Dragon and made it nothing like it.
Yeah, well, that kind of reminds me of another game that I want to quickly talk about, Barbarian on the iPhone. Now, I used to love Barbarian. I think it was one of the best games on the 8-bit and the 16-bit machines. You must have played it on the C64.
Yeah, absolute classic. It's one of the games I still play, actually, believe it or not, on the emulator.
It's simply superb. You know, you had Wolf from Gladiators, you had Maria Whittaker playing the princess, you had the evil wizard, what was his name, Drax?
Drax, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and basically you had all these moves. You could chop up people's head. It just looked fantastic. It was animated fantastic. So when I found out, well, when Sweeney told me that it was coming onto the iPhone and he said it doesn't look good, I thought maybe that's just early screenshots, and I got it. And again, it's the same thing that you said about Barbarian. Really bad polygons, really badly animated, controls don't really work. I just think, how on earth did these people play the original? I mean, why didn't they just keep it 2D? Why do they have to ruin it? I don't get what's gone wrong.
I don't know. I have never actually played it. Apparently there's a PC version out or coming out. But after that podcast that you and Swiney did, I did actually, you know, do a search on Google and that, and what I've seen of it, it looks horrendous. Mate, it looks worse graphics than PlayStation 1, sort of. It looks totally out of place.
It really does. It really looks like a like an early sort of PS1 type game. That's how bad it is. But I mean, I think all these people should actually take a leaf out of the guys from, you know, Bomber Games, who made the Streets of Rage remake, and that's a PC fan remake. And I tell you what, that was just the ultimate remake of any game I've actually ever played. I like playing retro remakes, you know, homebrew ones, and Streets of Rage remake, that's just phenomenal. That's the way it should be done.
Yeah, that's really good. It sort of incorporates all three of the Streets of Rage games as well.
Right, I tell you what, Mel, we're going to move on to the next section. Now, the next section is a little secret section, which I didn't tell you about. It's like a little quiz, believe it or not. Now, you do the podcasts, the Things Like That podcast, or should I say the Retro Resistance podcast with Tony.
Right.
So how long have you sort of been doing this podcast now with Tony?
It's been about a year, I think.
So you would say you're friends then, yeah?
Yeah.
So you talk online, you chat online, you talk and stuff?
Yeah, quite regularly, yeah.
Right, so let's see how well you actually know him. Shall we find out?
Yeah,
we've got a little test for you.
Okay.
Earlier on, I said to you, how well do you know Tony? And you said to me, you know him pretty well.
Yeah.
So, right, so here's some questions for you. And they're about Tony.
Right.
And let's see how well you know your co-host. What is his favourite game ever?
I'd say that World of Warcraft.
Right.
That's probably wrong. It might be a retro one.
Yeah, it's retro gaming related. So, do you want another chance?
One of the Dizzy games.
Wrong, mate.
Oh, right.
It's Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Right, so moving on to question number two. What is his fave style Japanese show?
That would be Kamen Rider.
Hey, well done, mate.
He goes on about that a lot.
He does. Not only does he say things like that, he talks about Kamen Rider all the time. Basically, myself, I don't like the show. Can't stand it. Right, so question number three. What is his fave gaming platform now and modern?
Now, PC.
Right, and what about classic?
Classic, the ZX Spectrum.
Correct, yeah, because he loves his ZX Spectrum and he loves his PC. He's got this whole PC versus the universe war going on, which, I don't know, I think if you're a gamer, you're a gamer. What difference does it make? All right, then, mates, we'll move on to the next question. Question number four.
Okay.
His favourite retro controller?
I'm going to say the Mega Drive pad, but that's probably wrong. I don't know, to be totally honest with you.
You know what? That is absolutely bang on right. Have you got like a list of these answers or something?
No, no. That was just a total guess, because I know when we spoke about consoles and that, I know he just really liked the Mega Drive. He prefers it over the SNES. And like I was saying, I know the SNES can do a lot of things the Mega Drive can't, but with like your R-types and games like that,
you said it.
The SNES is not quite that good, really, because it seems to slow down a hell of a lot.
All right, then, mate. So, final question for you to see how well you really know your co-host. Question number five. What women does he like? What hair colour? Does he like ginge? Does he like brunettes? Does he like blondes? Does he like redheads? Does he like women with shaved heads? Does he like women with Mohicans? What's his style? What does he like?
To be totally honest, I ain't got a clue. I'd say probably brunettes.
Wrong.
Yeah.
He likes blondes.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But anyway, I really appreciate you doing that, mate.
That's all right, no.
Definitely sounds like you know your co-host. So I'll tell you what, let's move on to the shout outs and start rounding this up, matey. So who would you like to say thank you to?
I'd like to say thanks to everyone from the Retro Asylum, everyone from YouTube, yourself, Andy, you know, and obviously my co-host, Tony, Will, pretty much everyone from the site.
And don't forget, mate, you've also got an iTunes account now.
Yeah, so that's right.
So you've got two iTunes reviews. You've got one from me and one from Teal. So guys, please, if you get the chance, don't forget to give the guys from Retro Resistance an iTunes review. And it's just a nice way of saying thank you, basically, that someone's actually listening to this. So any other thanks? Do you want to plug your YouTube channel?
My YouTube channel's Mount1976. I've in the future, I'm going to be uploading my videos straight to Retro Asylum and then unlisting them on YouTube, and then eventually I'll be on both.
Oh, I appreciate that, matey.
Because what I've found is more people are watching them on my YouTube and then not commenting when they're on Retro Asylum, which is, you know, really I wanted them to comment on both, but...
Yeah. no worries, matey. All right, so let me give a few shout-outs. I'd like to give a shout-out to the lads from Gamer Dads, and you can find them at gamerdads.co.uk. I want to give a shout-out to arcadeandretro.com. I want to give a shout-out to Oddpod. And I also want to give a big shout-out to Retro Video Gamer. And last but not least, I'd like to give a shout-out to Primal Scientist. And again, I'd like to thank yourself for actually coming on this show, Mal, because I really appreciate it, because you've just recorded a whole episode with Tony.
Yeah, so that's probably why I've been saying things like that a lot. one thing I want to say before I forget, I didn't have a chance to thank you, but thanks for that Nesbit magazine. I've read that on the train, and it's really good quality.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. In fact, it feels better paper quality than some of the magazines I've bought.
Okay, fantastic. So I think he's currently working on issue 2. So yeah, mate, like I said, I'd like to thank you. I'd like to thank Tony. I'd like to thank Will. I'd like to thank my co-hosts who aren't here today. I'd like to thank Swainy. I'd like to thank Glenn. I'd like to thank the whole Retro Asylum community. I'd like to thank the universe. Why not, mates? So thank you very much for listening to the Retro Asylum episode 14. In the next couple of weeks, we have got a few guests. The first big guest we've got is Colin Jones, and he is the guy that made Slightly Magic and Rockstar at My Hamster. So you can put your questions on the forum. There's a section that put site and podcast stuff. Ask your questions there, and I'll ask him when I interview him. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah, it's bye for me. Thanks for listening.
Is this guy young or is he in his 30s?
He's got to be in his 30s. He's like...
And his mum?
Yeah.
Has it? This man must have no sex if his mum's defending him on YouTube. Right, so I have to count to three. 3, 2, 1. So, let's move on to the next section then, matey. It is the... topic. Oh no, start that bit again. Where am I going? Yeah, I've noticed though that Tony has been editing out the podcast, because he does say it a lot more in real life. That's what me and Swainy noticed when we went to the South End thing. We kept on giggling every time we heard Tony say it.
Yeah, he does say it a hell of a lot. That's another one, that's it.
Oh, sorry, Uprising, I think. I forgot to include that bit.
Or Hardcore Uprising, but that's how it pronounces it, but it is actually spelled Hard Corpse.
Oh, yeah, no, that's why you pronounce Corpse.
Yeah.
It's just for whatever reason. Yeah. But I'll tell you what,